And now, here is Winfred Claiborne.
Dr. Jeffrey Simmons practices medicine in Oregon. In his early adult life, he was an atheist. But his study of the marvels of the human body and other aspects of life convinced him of the existence of God and of the truth of the Bible. His book, What Darwin Didn't Know, A Doctor Dissects the Theory of Evolution, has the endorsement of some of the leading intelligent design scholars in the world. On the front cover of the book, there is a brief quotation by Dr. William Dembski. Jeffrey Simmons makes Darwin's sleight of hand plain to see. Dr. Michael Behe, professor of biochemistry at Lehigh University and author of the book, Darwin's Black Box, The Biochemical Challenge to Evolution, commends Dr. Simmons' book. In What Darwin Didn't Know, Dr. Simmons gives a marvelous, entertaining physician's eye view of the intricate functions of the human body. The relentless detailing of biological elegance and complexity overwhelms facile Darwinian stories as a tidal wave overwhelms a beach. There are numerous ideas in Dr. Simmons' book I would like to discuss with you, but I shall concentrate on what he has written about human skin. Have you ever meditated on the marvels of human skin? The skin is the largest organ in the human body. It weighs between 6 and 10 pounds and covers an area of about 22 square feet in the average adult. One excerpt from Dr. Simmons' book will introduce today's topic, human skin. We arrive dressed in a birthday suit far superior to anything one can buy off the shelf. It is waterproof, antibacterial, antiviral, antifungal, elastic, flexible, self-repairing, toxin-resistant, insulating, self-cleaning, supportive, sexual, sensual, washable, self-replenishing, capable of absorbing some chemicals and rejecting others, porous, self-lubricating, scented, capable of making vitamins, sensitive to painful stimuli, and able to detect changes in temperature, vibration, and pressure. Page 155. Dr. Paul Brand, the world's leading leprosy specialist, and Philip Yancey, a professional writer, cooperated in writing the book, Fearfully and Wonderfully Made, A Surgeon Looks at the Human and Spiritual Body. These two authors have a fascinating section on human skin. Brand and Yancey challenge us. Think of the stimuli your skin monitors each day. Wind, particles, parasites, changes in temperature, pressure, humidity, light, radiation. Skin is tough enough to withstand the rigorous pounding of jogging on asphalt, yet sensitive enough to have bare toes tickled by a slight breeze. Page 124. Brandon Yancey mentioned Dr. Ashley Montague's book, Touching. They point out that Dr. Montague found close physical contact with a mother animal to be essential to the normal development of young animals. Page 136. When human babies are not touched, they die. Page 138. There is much more about human skin that reveals design. And as William Paley pointed out in the 1800s, where there is design, there has to be a designer. But the argument from design is not my major concern in this lesson today. I'm making a plea for television to show less skin on various programs. Dr. Brand says the skin of a normal adult weighs a mere 9 pounds. Page 118. 9 pounds translate into 144 ounces. If the skin of our bodies weighs approximately 144 ounces, am I exaggerating to insist that some of the young women on television are exposing about 134 ounces of skin? Some of the young women who play volleyball may be exposing as much as 140 ounces of skin. That leaves at least 4 ounces of skin that is not exposed. I have several questions for you to consider. Do young women like Paris Hilton, Madonna, and similar actresses know what effect their nakedness has on the young men and on some not so young who see them on television and in the movies? Are the actresses trying to create lustful thoughts in the hearts of the viewers? Or are they so naive they do not understand what they are doing? It is my considered judgment they are not naive. They know exactly what they are doing. They simply do not care about the adverse influence they have on their viewers. If they can get rich by baring their skin, what do they care about the boys and men who may be seriously damaged? Is it possible that some men will be so stimulated by the exposure of feminine bodies that they might go out and rape some vulnerable woman or girl? Oh, I'm aware that rape is not usually a sexual act. It is an act of power and violence. But we would be foolish to think that what one sees on the screen, either at home or in the theater, has no effect on the behavior of men, especially on those men who are already troubled about sexual matters. Thousands of our young men are confused about the relation of the sexes. If they see almost naked women on television, might they not be convinced that women are just waiting for some man to demand sexual favors? The Apostle Paul warned the Corinthians about the possibility of Satan's taking advantage of Christians. We are not ignorant of his devices. 2 Corinthians 2:11. The same apostle commanded the Ephesians, "Finally, my brethren, be strong in the Lord and in the power of his might. Put on the whole armor of God, that you may be able to stand against the wiles of the devil." Ephesians 6, 10 and 11. The Greek word translated wiles, methodeios, means methods. Paul was informing the Ephesians that they knew or should have known how the devil operates. So how does he operate? The Apostle John lists three ways the devil leads men and women astray. Please listen to these familiar verses. "Love not the world, neither the things that are in the world. If any man love the world, the love of the Father is not in him. For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life, is not of the Father, but is of the world. And the world passes away, and the lust thereof. But he who does the will of God abides forever." 1 John 2, 15-17. "I shall examine only the lust of the flesh." The expression means lust that is felt by the flesh. For example, King David lusted in the flesh for Bathsheba, the wife of Uriah the Hittite. His lust for her led to adultery and ultimately to murder. Do you remember what Flip Wilson loved to say? "The devil made me do it." Flip always got a laugh, but the gospel truth is, the devil does not make anybody do anything. Again, I ask, how does the devil operate? James outlines the steps the devil uses to deceive and to lead astray. "Let no man say when he is tempted, 'I am tempted of God.' For God cannot be tempted with evil, neither does he tempt any man. But every man is tempted when he is drawn away of his own lust and enticed. Then when lust has conceived, it brings forth sin, and sin, when it is finished, brings forth death." James 1:13-15. Let us examine briefly the steps that lead to sin and death. As every perceptive human being knows, the sexual appetite in men, especially in young men, is very powerful. I'm not criticizing the way God made us. Were it not for the strength of the sexual appetite, the human race would surely come to a screeching halt. But good common sense demands that we control all our appetites and desires. That is the reason the Bible constantly emphasizes self-control. We must not allow ourselves to be placed in situations where the temptation to sin is overwhelming. Paul commanded the Corinthians, "Flee fornication." 1 Corinthians 6:18. The verb "flee" is in the active voice and in the imperative mood. Paul commanded, "Keep on fleeing sexual immorality." James encourages Christians not to blame God for the temptations they face. God does not tempt us, and no man can tempt God. Satan places temptations before us to turn us away from God. We are tempted when we are drawn away by our own lusts and enticed. When an almost unclothed woman appears, either in person or on screen, we cannot avoid seeing her. I heard one preacher say, "It is not the first look that is sinful, but the second. When we dwell on that person and lust after her, then sin enters into the picture." The devil entices men by using immoral women to tempt them and using immoral men to tempt women. The wise man Solomon provides insight into the way harlots or prostitutes lead men to destruction. "For at the window of my house I looked through my casement, and beheld among the simple ones, I discerned among the youths, a young man void of understanding, passing through the street near her corner," that is, near the corner where the prostitute lived. "And he went the way to her house, in the twilight, in the evening, in the black and dark night. And behold, there met him a woman with the attire of a harlot, and subtle of heart. She is loud and stubborn. Her feet abide not in her house. Now she is without, now in the streets, and lies in wait at every corner. So she caught him and kissed him, and with an impudent face said unto him, 'I have peace offerings with me. This day I have paid my vows. Therefore came I forth to meet you, diligently to seek your face, and I have found you. I have decked my bed with coverings of tapestry, with carved works, with fine linen of Egypt. I have perfumed my bed with myrrh, aloes, and cinnamon. Come, let us take our fill of love until the morning. Let us solace ourselves with love. For the good man is not at home. He has gone on a long journey. He has taken a bag of money with him, and will come home at the day appointed.' With her much fair speech she caused him to yield. With the flattering of her lips she forced him. He goes after her straightway, as an ox goes to the slaughter, as a fool to the correction of the stocks, till a dart strike through his liver, as a bird rushes to the snare, and knows not that it is for his life." Proverbs 7:6-23. "Lest someone accuse me of blaming women and girls for the proliferation of sexual immorality in our generation, I must say very plainly, both men and women are responsible before God and before right-thinking people for the ungodly sexual conduct that exists in America. It is true that most prostitutes are women, but there would be no prostitution if men did not buy the services of prostitutes. Satan enters the hearts of women who sell their bodies for money. He also enters the hearts of the men who participate in prostitution. Prostitution is a diabolical, destructive, and damnable industry. Am I saying that the young women who expose their bodies on television, on the movie screens, on the beaches, and elsewhere are prostitutes? No, I'm not saying that. Did you notice one of the observations in the reading from Proverbs? The King James Version says the woman had the attire of a harlot. The English Standard Version says she was dressed like a prostitute. Do not the young women who expose most of their skin know that godly people perceive them as being immoral? I seriously doubt that it makes any difference to them, but that is a fact. They are pawns in the warfare between Satan and God. Satan uses them to create lust in the hearts of men and boys. To deny that fact is to be ignorant of the Scriptures and of human nature. Satan places temptations before us. When we yield to those temptations, it brings forth sin, and sin, when it is finished or full grown, brings forth death. Sin is very serious business. It may not seem that serious, but God Almighty takes it very seriously. Paul informed the Romans, "For the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men, who suppress the truth in unrighteousness." Romans 1:18. The same apostle told the same church, for the wages of sin is death. Romans 6:23. When we contribute to other people's sins, will God hold us accountable? In other words, when we cause another to stumble, will God judge us for such behavior? The New Testament uses the Greek verb skandalizo and the noun skandalon. The words involve offending someone. The noun means causing someone to stumble or providing an occasion to fall. If we offend a believer, it would be better to have a millstone hanged around our neck and drowned in the midst of the sea. Matthew 18:6. Paul pled with the Roman Christian, "Let us not therefore judge one another any more, but judge this rather, that no man put a stumbling block or an occasion to fall in his brother's way." Romans 14:13. Dear friend, if you cause a brother or a sister to stumble, would that bother you? Does it matter to you how your friends and neighbors think of your behavior? Do you have any idea what the word modesty means? The King James Version of the Bible uses the word modest only one time. Paul encouraged his young friend Timothy to preach, "I will therefore that men pray everywhere, lifting up holy hands without wrath and doubting. In like manner also, that women adorn themselves in modest apparel, with shamefacedness and sobriety, not with braided hair or gold or pearls or costly array, but which becomes women professing godliness with good works." 1 Timothy 2, 8-10. What is the meaning of modesty? Robert R. Taylor, Jr.'s booklet, Studies in 1 and 2 Timothy, makes the following appropriate remarks about modesty. Women are to adorn themselves not by daring displays of hairdos, expensive jewelry, and extravagant garments, but by the wearing of modest apparel and the proper manifestation of shamefacedness and sobriety. Proper attire is decent attire. The Christian woman should not be like the worldly woman who spends all her time and all her money in seeking to dress up the outward person. Quite the contrary, the Christian woman does not wish to wear anything that is improper in clothing or in her daily decorum. That is why shorts, halters, tight-fitting garments, see-through clothes, and modern swimming attire are not proper for God's woman when she is before the public eye. Page 37. Paul makes it plain that women are not to dress in such a way as to attract everyone's attention in the public worship. When a woman wears enough jewelry to start a jewelry store, she will likely interfere with others devoting their attention to the worship of the Almighty. When a woman shows too much skin, it is not easy for men, either young or old, to keep their minds on worshiping God. It is embarrassing to see young women wear too little clothing or too tight-fitting clothing. Like many of you in my audience, I grew up in a home where neither girls nor guys were permitted to wear immodest clothing. My parents would not allow my sister to show too much skin, either at worship or at school. My sweet Molly would not wear clothing that was suggestive. When she bought new dresses or slacks, she always asked me if her clothes were too suggestive. Molly always looked great. She never wore dresses or slacks that were immodest. She also taught the young women in her Sunday school classes to dress modestly. I believe all of those women would tell you today how Molly influenced them to dress as Christians. I must ask the fathers and mothers in my audience, are you concerned about the way your daughters and your sons dress? Tragically, some fathers and mothers seem not to care about the way their children dress. Do they not realize the thoughts that arise in the hearts of some people when they witness too much skin? Is there a mother on earth who does not know what turns men on sexually? Do they want their girls to dress in such a way as to create lust in the hearts of men? Fathers must be concerned about the way their sons and daughters dress when they go to school or to town or elsewhere. Could the unconcern of fathers and mothers be responsible for the enormous increase in out-of-wed pregnancies? I'm fully aware that many preachers, especially conservative preachers, are sometimes accused of being anti-sex. That may be true of some preachers, but no serious Bible student can deny the importance of human sexuality. When I was teaching marriage and family classes at Fried Hardeman University, I told the young people in my classes, "Please feel free to ask any question on your mind." I also told them, "If you do not feel comfortable asking publicly about sensitive issues, send me a letter through campus mail." I tried to impress upon those fine young people the Bible's teaching on sex. But I also stressed what the Bible says about sexual immorality. Paul told the Thessalonians, "For you know what commandments we gave you by the Lord Jesus. For this is the will of God, even your sanctification, that you should abstain from fornication." 1 Thessalonians 2, 2 and 3. Incidentally, the word fornication means all kinds of sexual immorality, not just premarital sex. It may not be easy in our culture for Christians and for others to remain sexually pure, but it is the command of God. Wearing the proper clothing is no guarantee that we shall refrain from sexual promiscuity, but it is a step in the right direction. I close with this admonition. Please encourage girls and boys to dress in such a way as not to cause another to lust. May God bless all of your endeavors. Thank you, and may God bless you.